Chapter 10. The Big Fraud. I'm not exactly sure when the fraud started, but I'm sure of one thing. No one in the entire court gave a shit that Perry was extorting millions of dollars from Orange County. Why? Because Jizabel was gone. The fraud took the form of Perry granting permission for Jizabel to work from home every day. I use the phrase working from home loosely. The exact way to phrase it would be staying at home, never coming to work, never doing anything, yet receiving a paycheck. Up front, Jizabel's kid has cystic fibrosis, which is a curse Jizabel has to pay for the rest of her kid's relatively short life. The way Perry and Jizabel believed they could get away with the big fraud was by insisting that Jizabel had to be home to take care of her sick daughter. I'm sure on specific days that was necessary, but the actual fact was her daughter was attending school every day. Sure, there were times when she was sick and needed medical treatment, but most of the time Jizabel's daughter was regularly attending school, and there was no need for her mother to be home every day for 10 years. Just to put this illness into perspective, the latest estimate of a lifespan from someone with cystic fibrosis in 2021 is 53 years. I know many people who didn't have this disease and died much younger. Just to be clear, all of us have a terminal illness. It's called time. As a wise man once said, none of us are going to get out of this life alive. Of course, Perry would hang his hat on the cystic fibrosis thing. I mean, who would question a mother working from home with a kid who has a terminal illness? So none of us ever did. Court Administration Human Resource Department didn't question it. The court administrator saw all this crazy shit going down, and he said nothing. You see, we didn't give a shit if the county paid her $70,000 a year or $1 million a year. It wasn't our money, and it sure wasn't our call to allow Jizabel to stay at home and collect a paycheck. Court administration couldn't grant that type of approval. Only Perry could allow his girlfriend to stay home. As I said, all of us were so happy to have her miles away and rarely see her pop into the office or eavesdrop on our conversations that compared to what our lives were before, this new situation was sublime. It was almost as if she didn't work at the court at all. Probably because she didn't work at the court at all. However, with Perry in charge, there was never a dull moment, if you consider the antithesis of a dull moment as keeping your job. On the books, Jizabel was assigned to maintaining our Windows Exchange email system, but in reality, every time she touched it, she would fuck it up. And when I say on the books, Perry insisted that Jizabel had assigned tasks. I'm sure that his assigned tasks for her were sexual in nature, but MIS tasks were more esoteric. With that in mind, my system manager took over all of Jizabel's duties. Yeah, it took him a fraction of the time it took Jizabel to complete some installation or task, and better still, it was always done correctly. Very little downtime for our court during those days of the big fraud. And you might think that would be enough for an individual. You know, make a lot of money without lifting a finger. Full health benefits for her husband and kids, retirement, deferred income, and all of that good stuff. However, this pristine existence wasn't good enough for Jizabel. You see, Jizabel had an ego the size of Perry's and Munyon's. If she went too long being ignored by the court or by my department, then she would start to feel insignificant. So even though the big fraud was taking place, there was still plenty of drama we had to contend with when Jizabel got antsy. She's the type of person who constantly has to have her ego stroked by anyone who is willing to pet her, like Perry. And as long as Perry is getting his regularly scheduled blowjobs, then he was in a good place as well. Yet when Jizabel looked to my department to pacify her existence, she got nothing back. She was listening to crickets. Most of the time we wouldn't even respond to her phone calls or emails. Communicating with her at any level was like waking the pissed off giant sleeping in your backyard. And this woman had a mean streak a mile long. Before the big fraud, before Perry gave her the forever pass, before she had no job duties, way back at the beginning of time, Jizabel was in charge of our Exchange server, our email server. If my system manager told her to upgrade Exchange to the next version, this is how Jizabel would attack that assignment. The very first thing she would do was nothing. I have to admit that she did this very well. Jizabel would wait and wait and wait, all the time saying she was researching the upgrade. Keep in mind that my system administrator could do this in a few hours, but Jezebel was dumb and lazy and a real fucking bitch when it came to doing actual paid work. So, in the next phase, after her months of doing research, she might decide to do a beta upgrade on a test server and see how it went. Isn't it crazy that it never went well? She would have all sorts of excuses such as hardware limitations, bugs in the software, and the way our exchange topology was laid out. To us, her reports or her failures meant nothing except she was planning on doing more research for a few more months. In order to pacify her and not end up in Perry's chambers, we might have to uselessly install more memory in the server, maybe upgrade the operating system to satisfy her complaints, you know, all the things that Jezebel was hired to do. Then, when it was apparent to all of us that she didn't have the skill set to upgrade this or that, she would call the vendor of the product and really lay into them. These poor vendors, our department really felt bad for them. They are working as support analysts for their companies, just like my support department worked for the court. They didn't get paid extra to deal with complete assholes. So after being shit on by Jezebel for months on end, our vendors' support departments would refuse to take Jezebel's calls. I mean, we're talking about Fortune 500 companies that had isolated our little court and would no longer field our phone calls. You would have to reach epidemic levels of being the nastiest person on the planet to be singled out by an empire of a company. I assume after so many of Jezebel's tirades, they had their sophisticated call center software recognize her number and pop up with a message each time she called that read only two words. Fucking cunt. Jezebel destroyed every vendor relationship we had, to the point where they wouldn't respond to any of us. It got so bad that I began receiving calls from Microsoft's major players, like the president who ran the entire Exchange product line. He would try to be as diplomatic as possible, yet the crux of his call was they never wanted to hear from Jezebel again. Like, ever. If it meant that we would move on to their competitors' products, then they were good with that. They even encouraged it. Most of these vendors had an auto-record call center and they would play me back their recorded conversation. Jezebel was not only the employee from hell, she was the customer from hell. She called the vendors stupid and ignorant and would threaten them time and time again by switching from their software or hardware to some other company's software. It was horrible and gave our court a real black eye when it came to vendor and customer relations. It got so bad that we secretly removed her from all and any assignments that might bring her into contact with our vendors. The woman was so caustic that she couldn't be trusted to make a phone call for elevated vendor support. So when Jezebel went home and didn't come back for 10 years, we were good with it. My system manager did everything without any help from Jezebel. When I was fired by Munyan, I had hired my original system manager, two senior system analysts, one junior system analyst, a system programmer, and a network analyst. But back then, when Jezebel took a powder, my system manager was my only system person and this guy ran everything by himself. He should have received some type of award for not only eliminating Jezebel from touching anything technical and still remaining somewhat sane in the process. He barely got any time off and that went on for years and years until I started adding more staff. Like I said before, you would think that Jezebel would be happy being forgotten. Yet, about every quarter I was called up to Perry's office and asked how Jezebel was performing. In the back of my mind, I was thinking that Perry would know how she was, performing much better than I did. He had ample space under his desk with a lot of headroom. I knew it was a trick question because there was no right answer. If I said she was doing great, then Perry would say that he heard she wasn't getting enough of the prime assignments. If I said she wasn't assigned anything because she fucked up everything that she touched, well, by now, you can guess how that would turn out. Perry was always looking to me to give him a clear-cut reason to fire me. I'm certain that he told Jezebel that before he retired, he would find a reason or a method of firing me without also losing our court's popular court administrator. So near the end of Perry's reign of terror, knowing that he had to shit or get off the pot, he began having interviews with each of my staff. That's like 20-some people. He didn't interview any of the other department's staff. Just mine. For some reason, Perry felt that having his very best friend Judge Munyan attending these inquisitions might give these get-togethers some degree of legitimacy. As if Perry was saying,
"Hey, I have a female in the room. Therefore, of course, this isn't about finding dirt on Brett. so I can fire him and make my girlfriend the new CTO.
And for the most part, he was right. At that time, no one understood the extremes Munyon would go to protect her mentors, her words not mine, during her podcast reputation. My staff didn't look at this as interviews. They looked at it as straight-up interrogations. It was a nightmare for them. It was like being called into viewing an execution with the expectation you would say, "That was cool." My staff understood that this wasn't about our department. It had nothing to do with them or their job. All it was about was collecting dirt on yours truly. Before they appeared for their scheduled meeting with Munyon and Perry, they already understood this was yet another Perry power play in order to pacify his girlfriend. After all, we were the most technologically advanced court in the world, and that was a problem for Perry. In spite of Perry always throwing wrenches into the works, we had created an MIS department that was the envy of all the courts in the world. So why would a chief judge with the world-class MIS department be interested in interviewing just my MIS staff? I can't recall a single meeting with Perry that wasn't precipitated by Jezebel, or an effort to make me so miserable that I would simply quit. The typical interview of my staff would go like this. Perry would start with some light questions like, did they enjoy working at the court? Blah, 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 trying to put my staff at ease when their antennas were up like a flagpole. Then the questions would start getting more directional and implicit. Perry would ask if my employee had any complaints. You know, just general complaints that could be pinned on me. After all, if there are complaints of any type, well, the buck stops at the CTO. Near the end of the meeting of terror, Perry would ask,
"So, what would you say are Brett's strengths and greatest weaknesses in managing MIS?
I had some good people, and they said plenty of good things about me. But Perry didn't give two shits about that. All he was interested in was documenting all the bad things my staff said about me, and he wouldn't let them leave until they told him and Munyon something negative about me. And Munyon dutifully documented every negative thing my staff said. When my staff returned to my office, it was apparent that Perry had mind-fucked them during these interrogations. They were either too scared of that fucking psychopath or too traumatized to provide me with any of the negative things they were forced to say. I don't blame them. I held nothing against them. I was ass and elbows in just as deep with Perry's crazy-making. I mean, I couldn't hold anything they said against me any more than you could hold a prisoner responsible when their head was secured in the guillotine. In extremes, we will say anything to save our lives, but in this case, it was to save our jobs. My staff was simply trying to keep their jobs, like me. Perry set up all these interviews without bothering to mention them to court administration. I had to actually report that Perry and Munyon were interrogating my staff to court administration, and I think they were truly shocked. Could they stop it? Hell no. I believe they made an effort to get a representative from Human Resources to sit in on the interviews, but that was quickly nixed by Perry. And that's the problem when a chief judge has unchecked hiring and firing capabilities of court administration employees. Most of the chief judges in Florida have never even seen a court employee working in jury services or other departments in the court. Other than court administration executives, they couldn't name five other people on the entire staff. Yet, when you get a crazy motherfucker like Perry in the big chair and he can irresponsibly ravage the entire agency with zero consequence, yeah, that might be a problem. Until someone writes a book. So Perry's interrogations continued for weeks and weeks. Every few days, his JA would provide the schedule of the next MIS victim who was to be interviewed, and it was like attending a parole hearing. My staff already knew what Perry was after. He was after me and my job. Munyon dutifully nodded her head during these interludes, yet said nothing. She was like a mechanized mannequin who was set on Perry's couch on a time delay that actuated a fake smile and a nod of her head. The President Lincoln robot at Disney has more technological smarts and morals than Munyon. Munyon's infatuation with Perry was so weird. It reminded some of my staff of the woman who marries a mass murderer who is incarcerated for life. Blind devotion. It made all of us wonder what the fuck was the history between these two maniacs. It was as if our court was not in the United States, but resided in some dictatorial country like Russia. All of us questioned how a court in the United States could go so badly off the rails. The obvious answer is, You have to have some maniacs in power to make that happen and employees who have no options or recourse. It surprised the hell out of me that after weeks and weeks of interviews, nothing ever transpired from it other than adding an other PTSD shockwave to my family and my department. I don't know if all complaints Perry and Munyon compiled were shared with my court administrator or if Perry just didn't think he had enough to move my ass onto the street. It was a horrible month, a horrible year, a horrible decade. I was just trying to do my job the best I could, but that meant nothing to Perry and Munyon. They were playing a different game on different fields with rules that were manufactured by Perry's demented imagination that changed by the day. My staff and I could never envision how this one-sided game would eventually turn out.